What if the greatest mistake churches make is not failing to reach people on Easter, but failing to keep them after? What if the real loss doesn't happen before the moment of decision, but in the days and weeks that follow it? Because here's what we've seen over and over again. People say yes to Jesus, and no one walks with them after. They show up once and never get connected. They experience something real on a Sunday morning and then slowly drift back into the life they came from. All because no one built a bridge from that moment to the next one. The church celebrates decisions, but Jesus is looking for disciples. So what if Easter is not the finish line? What if it's the front door? Imagine if the same urgency that drove 6 weeks of prayer and fasting and incarnational engagement now drives something equally intentional on the other side of Sunday. That's what this podcast is all about. And it's all right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts Podcast.
You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Bruce Ritter alongside Charles Russell, and this is season three. We're already up to episode 12, and this is the final installment of our five-part series on planning an Easter service through the lens of apostolic leadership and evangelistic strategies and mobilization. I want to welcome everyone today. It's Monday for us. It might be a different day of the week when you're catching this. We're glad, in any case, that you've joined in. We're coming off an exciting weekend of March Madness, and some exciting things are happening all around the basketball world. And one thing I've got to give kudos to is thank you, UConn, for taking out the Blue Devils. Charles, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm thankful for buzzer beaters and all of those wonderful things that occurred this weekend. So, doing good. We're not at the home base today. We're on a last-minute trip in Florida, and so just some things kind of aligned, and so we're able to be on a little trip for spring break for my youngest daughter down in Florida visiting my oldest daughter, who's in college, and so we're just glad to have a happy family reunion this week. But glad to be here on the podcast as we're moving toward this final episode in this series as we've been marching toward Easter. And I don't see Peter Cottontail anywhere, but Easter's on the way, and it's coming this week. And we're glad to have this final episode to kind of make the final steps, the final push to this intentional evangelism strategy as we're marching toward Easter.
Yeah, and Charles, you know, the full arc of what we've been walking through is exciting to get to this episode, and yet I find it so rewarding to go back and look at some of the material we've covered over the last few weeks. But you know, the full arc of this series, 6 weeks out, we started helping pastors identify their evangelists and encouraging their people to identify their four people within their relational reach or spiritually disconnected. 5 weeks out, we encouraged people to start fasting and praying, and we talked about how to strategically do that, you know, discerning the receptive gates, praying into those, and targeting with precise intercessory prayer. 4 weeks out, we began in engaging people moving from out from intercession into incarnation. That's where we started conversations. You know, after we've had a conversation with God about them, we start having conversations with them, releasing acts of compassion. Again, the things that build relational trust, that make an invitation mean something. And then 2 weeks out, we talked about discerning readiness and extending those moments of the Spirit's alignment, those invitations, with genuine urgency and without pressure. But now we're in the final week, and we're going to talk about this final week as well as some things that need to be on the table beyond that. And so we're going to move in about three directions today. First, we're going to talk about what it means to contend spiritually in the days immediately before Easter. Because resistance, Charles, I know you're aware of this, resistance intensifies as breakthrough approaches. And so we want to be praying into that. Secondly, we want to talk about Easter Sunday itself, the systems that need to be in place for your harvest moments to actually function as one enterprise working together to make that day not only meaningful, but life-changing. And third, we want to talk about what comes after Easter, because the 48 hours that follow your Easter Sunday service may be the most important window of the entire six-week process. So, Charles, one thing I want to make sure we stress time and time again is that we work within a five gifts framework. And so this final phase demands that all five gifts are operating, coordinating, aligned. And so, you know, it's the apostolic leadership is holding that system, encouraging the process. Prophetic leadership is sustaining the right spiritual atmosphere through the finish. That means continuing to pray. Evangelistic leadership is the urgency and the passion that's carrying this forward. Again, pastoral leadership catches and shepherds the people who respond, ministers to their needs. And then the teaching leadership is already thinking about how do we equip them for this new life that's ahead of them. So this really is the whole body functioning together, I think at its highest expression.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is, like you said, Bruce, all five gifts converging and working together for this moment, if you will. So, but most leaders, you know, if we're not careful, we can treat this final week before Easter simply as a logistics week. You know, we can get caught up in technical rehearsals, volunteer coordination, the flow of the service, and the list just goes on and on and on. It never seems to be completed. And all of those things are important and they matter. But underneath all of that, something else is happening. And if your leadership doesn't recognize it, then you'll probably be well prepared structurally, but caught off guard spiritually. So let's talk about contending for breakthrough in this final week towards this push for Easter. As Easter approaches, resistance often it increases, and so people who were open, suddenly become distracted. People who were leaning toward a yes now all of a sudden start finding reasons to pull back. Conversations that felt like they were moving somewhere now begin seemingly to stall. And your evangelists, it's possible they can interpret this as a sign that maybe they misread the readiness of the harvest, or that the soil wasn't as soft as they thought. And so leaders, here's where we have to move in and help our evangelists. We have to train them to understand what's actually happening. This isn't misreading. This is opposition. Darkness is always going to push back. We have to understand that. Anytime we take new steps of faith forward, we've got to understand that darkness is going to resist and is going to push back. And so spiritual momentum toward a significant decision almost always brings about some kind of spiritual resistance. And your evangelists need to be made aware and need to be well prepared for it rather than surprised by it. So this final week of intercession, it's not a wind down, right? It's really a sharpening. Where the previous weeks of prayer were about releasing kingdom blessing kind of broadly and discerning those receptive gates specifically, this week your evangelists are contending for the people in their four. with focused precision. They're praying against things like fear, the fear that walking into a church for the first time will feel foreign or overwhelming. Praying against distraction, the business that will fill the weekend and make it easy to put off a decision. Praying against spiritual blindness that keeps people from recognizing what God is actually offering them. Praying against the bondage and oppression that has, in some cases, held people back from responding for possibly years. Look, a lot of people are they're not rejecting God this week, but they are being held back from responding to Him. And so our evangelists are the ones who truly are standing in the gap, declaring clarity, declaring freedom, declaring divine appointment over people who are closer to a yes than they know. What a great word that we're using here. Our evangelists are contending. They're contending for people. So it would behoove us as leaders to encourage our evangelism corps to reach out one more time this week. Not to pressure, not to kind of tighten the screws on someone or sell a bill of goods, but to confirm, just to a simple confirmation. Hey, just wanted to check in. You're still going to be able to make it this week. A simple text, just a small reminder that you're saving a seat, an expression of genuine anticipation. And who knows where the Spirit leads, a prayer spoken directly over the conversation. Something like, you know what, I'm praying for you this week. I really believe something significant is about to happen. Look, we're not advocating for a script here. This is an ambassador acting on authority that they actually carry.
Charles, there's so much wisdom in what you're sharing. I think it's important that we prepare our people, you know, for this last week and having a mindset that don't be intimidated by a little opposition, a little pushback. That's normal. And I want to, you know, I'll add something to that. I think it's also normal to feel that internal resistance in yourself. Mm-hmm. That feels a little hesitant to make that final invitation. So stick in there. Don't, as the Apostle Paul would say, don't grow weary in well-doing. Yeah. Keep yourself applied to the work of the ministry. So as you're contending spiritually, you must also build some structural dynamics. And when people do respond, and they will, you need to be ready for it. And so I think there's a harvest moment without a harvest system that we want to avoid. Because that allows opportunities to slip through your hands. We're going to direct the conversation more into some structural things just for Easter Sunday. Remember, the Easter Sunday is a harvest moment, and that requires preparation. Nothing is going to happen that day where there haven't been seeds planted and prayers prayed and planning and structure put in place. And so the first system is a clear salvation moment. Don't assume that everyone in the room understands the gospel. There are plenty of people that sit in our seats on Easter Sunday. And if we're honest, I think almost every Sunday, there are people that have been brought there, carried there, invited there on someone else's intercession. And so, you know, there's a real need to be encouraged and to be bold. And this means that their first real exposure to what the Christian faith actually claims and offers. So on that day, make sure you present sin and grace and how to respond with clarity. Remove the jargon. Make the pathway plain. Avoid the Christianese. And then give people a genuine, unhurried opportunity to respond. Not a rushed altar call that somehow squeezed between worship and dismissal, but a moment that communicates that this matters, this is important. There's gravity around this moment for you. Charles, you shared to our our people as they make their invitations this week. And when it comes to the opposition, the sense of don't be afraid to declare over them. I think this is a significant moment. Mm-hmm. And I think we carry that same spirit into the invitation that this matters. And there's room for you here. This is a significant opportunity for you. So again, that invitation needs to be clear and unhurried. The second system, I think, is being ready for baptism. When people say yes to Jesus, momentum is a gift. So have those next steps outlined for them. Make it clear to them. Communicate to them. Be prepared to take those next steps immediately or within a few days. Have a clear, simple on-ramp to baptism that your team can communicate on the spot. Momentum in new faith is not something to manage slowly. It's something to move with. In fact, this is an on-ramp for you to begin to, you know, move people into those initial discipleship stages. I think a third system would be connection. You know, you need to capture names, contact information, and you need to have that system in place and the nature of the decision that was made. Again, it's not for a database, but we need to have some handles for follow-up that allows us to be not only personal, but timely. Again, that momentum factor is really important. Those initial moments of a person's profession of faith, that's the moment to begin to encourage them in these new steps. And so think through how this happens practically within your church. You're getting that information through cards, digital forms. We use digital forms in our church. Little QR codes in accessible places on your slide presentation screens, on your LED board, even printed material. Just ways that people know that they can get the information they need. And so you also want to make sure that your people are equipped for those personal conversations with those individuals. Again, whatever fits your environment, but the thing is what matters is that no one who responds on Easter Sunday disappears into anonymity. We don't want that. We want to have the communication clear and out front. And I would say the fourth system, and this really is one of those non-negotiables, we need to have a follow-up team. We need to have people ready to move within those first 72 hours, not the following week, not whenever schedules allow. Now listen, Charles and I have done a series. This has been a series-long podcast, and this information, it is sequential, and we couldn't give you everything at the beginning. So I get it that you're thinking, man, I don't have much of this in place. Well, don't be discouraged. Just let this be a lesson that these are things you start building now for the next time you do a cycle of a 6-4-2. But remember, when it comes to follow-up, that this is so crucial, because within 3 days of your big day, that Easter Sunday in this case, that is a crucial time. Because people are most open in the hours and days immediately following a significant spiritual decision. And if the church loses presence in that window of time, the world is there to fill it. So so make sure that we have that follow-up team built and in place and trained and ready to be deployed for those moments. Charles, it is about excellence. I sound like Bret the Hitman Hart here, the excellence in Easter execution. but it's not about performance quality. It's that matters, and that should be something I think we all strive, because that brings glory to God. That's who we're striving to please. But the bottom line, it's about removing every possible obstacle between a person and a genuine encounter with Christ. So every element of your service should be evaluated through the lens that's looking and answering the question, does this help someone who's never been here before understand what God is offering, and how do I take the next step toward it? So again, a vital, vital part of your Easter Sunday.
Man, absolutely. Bruce, I don't mean to put you on the spot. What was Bret the Hitman Hart? What was his his finishing move. I can't remember. you're just bringing up great imagery here. Excellence in Easter execution. We need the finishing move. I'm thinking, put the Easter bunny and the devil in the headlock, but I need that Bret Hart finish. I just can't, for the life of me, think of his finishing move. So.
It was, and I can answer that. It was the sharpshooter.
The sharpshooter.
But when Sting, one of my favorites of all time, he called it the Scorpion Deathlock.
Well, whatever you call it, whether you're going to sharpshoot it or you're going to put a Scorpion Deathlock, excellence in Easter execution. Man, we cover the gamut here on the 5GS podcast. From
we're religious, connected.
We're connected. All
that's
we,
right.
We got you covered here, Matt.
Charles, you and I are men of culture. Everyone needs to know this.
We're Renaissance men to the highest degree, for sure. Well, I had another thought, but I've totally lost my mind. That rabbit hole into the wrestling world has rattled me a little bit. But I do want to say the follow up component to all this is so critical. And like you said, Bruce, that kind of 48 to 72 hour window, it's just so critical to take action and to be involved, to have presence in people's lives, and not to stalk people, but mm-hmm. to just we've worked so hard to have presence through prayer and intercession and acts of kindness and invitation, and now mm-hmm. we want to continue that presence with hospitality as people are coming to the actual church service, and then follow up and belonging after the service. And so and you make a great and valid point. If you don't have all these components together, try to sketch something that the church could do, kind of as a temporal or kind of a maybe even a Band-Aid approach this week, and that you could begin to build the system of follow up for your future big events and future evangelism processes, but. I would just say couch all of it in personal interaction, and just begin to be intentional in the follow up. I think follow up begins on Sunday afternoon of that Easter and continues Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, with just some simple touches that just remind people of our presence in their lives and God's love for them. As he's drawing them,
Charles. If I could just say one thing about that, we've said this whole time that this is not this process is not it's not a pitch, it's not a marketing scheme. We want it to be authentic and genuine. That's why we have you praying and laboring, for these individuals. These are people in your circle. And as leaders, we need to recognize that. So there needs to be what I might call a continuity of spirit through the follow-up process, that it's genuine, that we want to convey that same servant-oriented, we're here for you. We want you to know you have a place in this family. And I think if you hold that value and allow that to drive your follow-up, to where it's authentic and genuine, you're the better off for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as intentional as we've been advocating for us to be in regards to evangelism, bring that same intentionality into the follow-up process. And so, which that just brings me to a thought. If leave us a comment. Would an episode, would a series of episodes on the follow-up process, would that help you? Would that be beneficial? Leave us a thumbs up or a comment. Let us know if that would be something that could be helpful to you and the leadership of the church. Well, even a well-executed sharpshooter, I mean, even a well-executed Easter Sunday. Jeez, I'm getting back on track. that's not the finish line, right? In fact, what happens, we've talked about this 2 or 3 day window, but even expanding that in the next 2 weeks following Easter, it may be more determinative for long-term transformation than anything that happens during the service itself. And so let's talk about some post-Easter retention and discipleship. Here's where many churches lose the harvest. It's not through bad intentions, but it's through the absence of a system that catches people after the moment of decision and walks with them into what comes next. So the first 14 days following Easter are critical. Within that window, every person who responded needs three things. All right. So number one, personal contact with someone they already have a relationship with. They need a clear and simple next step that they can actually take. And finally, they need a relational connection to the broader community of the church. So, not a mailer, not a generic follow-up email, a person, ideally someone they already know, reaching out and saying, "Hey man, we're glad that you were there with us on Easter. Here's what comes next, and I'm going to be part of that with you." This is where your evangelist shift roles, if you will. Up to this point, they've been intercessors, they've been investors, they've been inviters, ambassadors for 6 weeks. Now they shift roles and become spiritual parents, if you will. The relational investment they made over the course of this process is not something to step back from after Easter Sunday. It's the very thing that makes long-term connection possible. So encourage your evangelists to really lean into the existing relationship that's been strengthened and formed up during this process. The person who sat next to someone in church who prayed for them for 6 weeks before that, who showed up with a meal or a conversation or an act of genuine care or kindness, that person is uniquely positioned to walk with them into what follows. So assign some discipleship relationships and small group connections quickly. We want to act fast and act quick to move them from this event of Easter Sunday now into a process of small group relational connections. Don't let new believers navigate their first weeks of faith in isolation. Transformation happens in relationship, and isolation in the early days of faith is one of the primary reasons people who made genuine decisions don't remain. And so the urgency that drove the invitation must now drive the integration. If I could kind of wrap all that up in simple terms, would be this is the new life, new birth has occurred on Easter Sunday. And now it's time to care for and to nurture this new life. Man, I am the proud father of two beautiful daughters. And both times at the hospital, when these girls were delivered, two separate occasions, we were overjoyed, just overwhelmed with emotion and so filled with gratitude and thankfulness to the Lord for these gifts of new life. And we celebrated and rejoiced, and it was wonderful. But Bruce, what my wife and I did? We actually bundled those girls up and took them home from the hospital. We put them in a car seat and took them to cribs and to rooms and spaces that were prepared uniquely and specifically for them. And we began the lifelong journey of raising these girls up. That's what we're asking our evangelists to do, to to move into a role of being some spiritual parents that yes, we praise God for a new life. We praise God for a new birth that occurred on this Easter Sunday. New people have walked into the faith and the family and kingdom of God. And now as a church, it's our responsibility. It's our joy. It's our honor and privilege to wrap those people up and take them into the relational connections of the family of God, the local church, and begin the lifelong process of raising this new life into maturity through discipleship. And that the greatest way to do that is through relational connections, through small groups, where we are relationally connecting people into the broader life of the church. So I'll get off my soapbox now.
Absolutely vital. Again, Charles, just really, really good way to frame that. The idea of that we bring them into our homes, we bring them into our lives, and that really is, that's the genuine, authentic spirit we're talking about carrying through this whole process. That we're making a commitment to people and their spiritual journey. And so it's not just getting them there on Easter Sunday, but it's those initial steps that follow their commitment to Christ. Now, when post-Easter follow-up is done well, this is exciting. This, something begins to happen that goes beyond retention. This is where you begin to experience harvest multiplication. And the system that produced it becomes a culture of the congregation rather than just a strategy for a season. And I just think this is so vital. It's the most exciting part of this process to me. It's when your church has been engaged in reaching new people, seeing them come to Christ, beginning those initial discipleship steps. But when that becomes the culture of your church, and not just a six-week strategy for one Sunday. Man, that's exciting to me. So let's talk about multiplying the harvest for a few moments. Again, in the week or two following Easter, it's important that you debrief with your evangelism core. Get feedback. This is not a performance review. It's a spiritual conversation. Where we want to know what happened. Where did you see the activity of God? Again, this is, you know, Charles, we talk about the importance of reflection when it comes to a person's growth, especially a leader's growth. They need to be able to reflect and think through that. And so as the pastoral leader, or if you're a team leader, this is where that comes in. So have the conversation. Talk about what happened, who came, who made a decision, what did you observe in the process of what was happening in their life. Maybe who didn't come but is still in process, and how you can continue to help those make progress toward Christ. You may want to ask, what shifted in the 6 weeks that surprised you? Or what would you do differently? These are all excellent questions to initiate discussion with your team. Because not everyone in each evangelist four will have responded by Easter Sunday. But again, we weren't making connections with them just to get them for one Sunday. We're here to see them make progress and come to faith. And so you want to continue to encourage that process and nurture that. Some were internal seekers at the start of the process, and they're still there, moving but slowly. So we want to help that process along. Some came close, pulled back at the last moment. You know, we talked about the resistance. Some showed up but maybe didn't respond publicly. Remember, none of these people should be abandoned when the Easter season ends. By no means. Keep it up. Keep ministering to them. Keep being the catalyst for one more step in their journey toward Christ. Now, we can also talk about how that cycle continues. What do we do? Well, we continue to identify, to pray, to engage, to invite, to follow up on brand new decisions. Again, that's the repeatable process. We've talked this whole time about one of the great advantages of this approach is that it's scalable. It's reproducible. Mm-hmm. It's something that can become a cultural habit if you're in your church. I mean, how many pastors, would you raise your hand out there and say, I would love an evangelistic habit in my church. I would love an invitational habit in my church. Well, this is how you build it. You've got to start and initiate these steps. Again, Charles, this is, to me, this is one of those apostolic leadership dynamics. Mm-hmm. This is where you as the pastor really need to make sure you have a hold on this system, and that you're equipping, you're bringing leaders around it, and you're releasing it to your congregation. The system doesn't shut down after one harvest. You want this to continue. And so it becomes the operating culture of a congregation that's learned to live as ambassadors for Christ every week of the year. And here's the longer vision worth holding on to. When this is done well, and when evangelists are equipped, when intercession is sustained, when compassion is practiced, when invitations are spirit discerned and aligned with the activity of God, relationally grounded, when new believers are genuinely discipled, you're not just adding people to a church. You're reproducing people who will reach more people. Yeah. And so evangelism becomes not a department, not a program, not a strategy. It becomes a culture. And not a season of your church's life, but a way of life for your church. Mm-hmm. And the harvest for this Easter, we want to encourage you. Let it become the seed for the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great way to put that, Bruce. And so as we come to a close on today's episode and wrap up this series of evangelism, let me leave you with a question. I want you to think about this, not just in terms of this Easter, but in terms of the kind of church that you're building for the years ahead. So, here's the question. Who is God entrusted to you that needs more than an invitation? They need a guide. Who is God entrusted to you that needs more than an invitation? They need a guide. Who in your congregation right now has the capacity to be a spiritual parent to someone who is just taking their first steps towards faith? And what would it look like to build a system, again, not just for one Easter season, but as a permanent architecture of your church's life, where no one who says yes to Jesus ever has to walk the next steps alone? That's the heart of the evangelistic gift and its full expression, not just reaching people, but truly restoring them, establishing them, and releasing them into the same life of kingdom representation that brought them in. So that's a great question and a great scenario to think through individually, Pastor, but also maybe in a team meeting, a staff meeting, a leadership meeting. Pose that question and let the team begin to chew on that and digest that as you begin to kind of form the future of evangelism, where evangelism, like Bruce has so eloquently said, it's becoming a way of life. It's no longer an event. This is the culture of the church. I think that question could really help the team form this kind of culture in the church.
Excellent point of reflection, Charles, to leave with our listeners. We also want to encourage you, if the podcast is helpful to you, we want you to like, follow, subscribe, and share it. By all means, share it with other ministers. We think our approach is rather practical. Again, it's reproducible. It fits any church culture. If we could, let's bring some things into sharp focus as we close out today. Easter is not the goal. A full room is not the goal, but a functioning evangelistic system in your church, that's the goal. Because you know what that system is? It's made up of disciples. It's made up of people that are doing the works of Jesus, being focused on the priorities of the kingdom. Remember, without the system in place, Invitations don't multiply. Decisions don't get followed up on. And new believers don't become disciples. And what could have been harvest can become a missed opportunity. So we've walked through in this series, again, not just a seasonal strategy, but a repeatable, scalable framework where we identify people intentionally, where we pray with focus and precision, what's where we engage people relationally, we follow up with structure, and we disciple with responsibility. And Charles, I think we've done a really good job. I'm not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think we've done a really good job of laying out the evangelistic gift that builds a culture for evangelism in the church and not just moments.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I needed that affirmation. I was feeling a little low over here on this side of the camera. So thank you. You've done an excellent job too. So I hope you feel the warmth of that affirmation. Well, look, here's the reality. Most churches don't struggle with passion for people, right? What they do struggle with is systems for people. They don't need more desire. What they do need is a design. They need clear pathways, trained leaders, defined follow-up processes, accountability structures that ensure no one's overlooked.
Yeah, so where does your current evangelism process break down? It can be before the invitation. It can be at the invitation. Maybe after the decision, because whatever you don't systematize, you're not going to sustain.
Yeah, and this is exactly where this is where we like to come alongside leaders through CharlesRussellTraining.com, CharlesRussellMinistries.com, or Bruce at CoachingCardia.com. We help pastors and leadership teams diagnose gaps in their evangelistic systems, build clear, repeatable pathways, train and activate their people, and create cultures where evangelism and discipleship actually multiply.
It's been such a privilege to walk with each of you through this series. And from the 6 weeks of intercession to this invitation strategy to the final charge, again, it's not a program. It's a culture we want to build. And it's a picture of what we believe the church can look like when every gift is functioning, every believer is mobilized, and every son, lost son and daughter of the Father is being prayed for by name. So we want to encourage you, go contend, go celebrate, and go multiply. And we'll see you next week right here on the Five Gifts Podcast. You've been listening to the Five Gifts Podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.